accession number 27185, reel 53.
Major Barras, reel
53. Right, well, I think we've reached 1953 now, and it's going to, as I hope I can demonstrate, an active, very active, momentous year. The first thing that happened was in January was a visit by Winston Churchill, who had really come out to recuperate after an illness. He stayed at, this is on the 17th of January, remember that. He stayed at King's House, the governor's house, to start with, and then he went round down to Kingston and signed the book and received the freedom of the city. And then he came back and did a drive through Up Park Camp, which I had to organise. He was only in there 5 minutes. But it took quite a bit of organising beforehand with escorts, communications as to say where he was and when he was coming. And then we encouraged all the troops to come out and line the route and cheer as he went by. Officers were told that they would have to put on uniform and salute. We even got any patients out of the BMH who could make it in wheelchairs and hobble there, or carried, families and so forth. And they all lined the route. Now, of course, at that time, he was Prime Minister. It's not often that you order troops to go out and cheer a political figure because they may be voting for somebody else. But Churchill was rather special in those days, and, of course, they all turned out with a good heart and gave him a great reception. The convoy consisted of police, himself in a sort of open Land Rover. I came behind with the Brigadier and the next one, and then behind us were his son-in-law Christopher Soames and Mary, his daughter. The Governor was there, and then more police behind, and they drove slowly through. And that was it. Now, there were a reception in the evening at King's House, which we were invited to and went. And then later, I think it was the next day, because he then went across to the north coast where he stayed with Lord Beaverbrook, one of his old wartime ministers in his administration. And they had how we got invited to this party in Beaverbrook's garden, which was a huge estate. At night it was, I remember, balmy evening with sort of coloured lights in the trees. With all these people, I mean, we wandered around and we kept on coming across familiar faces like Noel Coward, Michael Redgrave, for all people. I mean, I could go on, and Ian Fleming was there. And the old boy sat, I can remember him sitting down near the house with Beaverbrook next to him. We didn't get anywhere near him, of course, but I mean, he just wanted to talk to his mates, I think, because he wasn't terribly fit at that time.
I was going to ask what impression you got of his physical condition.
Well, he seemed all right, but I mean, he always looks the same, doesn't he? When he got older, after the war, or when the war was over, he just sort of looked the same with his stick and cigar and hat. He didn't look at all sort of frail at all. I mean, he's a fairly heavily built sort of chap anyway, so very difficult for him to look frail.
What about Beaverbrook? Did you get any impression of him?
No, not really. He was sitting in a chair next to him. He looked like a little old monkey, as far as I can remember. perhaps I'm being a little rude, but because he did a great job during the war. And, of course, the governor had, I've mentioned her before, Mrs. Foote, the governor's wife. She's Italian, very vivacious lady who used to get around and did an excellent job as a governor's wife. I don't know, very few people seem to have English wives out there, American, Italian. So, anyway, he eventually retired to the North Coast, and presumably after about a couple of weeks or so, went home and resumed his duties as Prime Minister.
Did you have to take any particular security measures for his visit?
Only in Nut Park Camp. The police were responsible for everything outside. We had escort and with him as the convoy went through, and we cleared the road right the way through to make sure that only our own people were there and stopped people coming in the gates and that sort of thing. And after he'd gone through, we just opened it up again. As I say, he was only there for 5 minutes.
Presumably that would be a matter for your military police to
yes.
clear the road and
yes.
close the gates and so on.
Yes, that's right, yeah. Yep. But of course, the old brig used to have his dinner parties, which I used to have to attend. He had official dinner parties, which you had to put a uniform on when he invited people to what was called Flagstaff House he lived in. And I can remember so well, on the first occasion I went there, I don't know who the guests were. Anyway, it was the old-fashioned idea that the ladies then left the gentlemen to their port and cigars. And as soon as the ladies had gone, he got up and said, right, let's go in the garden and have a leak. See, so I didn't know whether I'd understood him correctly, but anyway, apparently the ladies dominated the lavatories inside the house, so his idea was to go in the garden. And I must say, on the first occasion when we went out there and I got behind a bush, I thought, I hope I've heard him right. I mean, supposing I wasn't supposed to be doing this, and somebody came round and said, what the hell are you doing in the Brigadier's garden? Anyway, I got used to it all right, and I was quite happy after that. He used to have one cocktail party a year, which he invited everybody he could think of who he needed to repay or do duty to, right from the governor down to the local ambassadors or commissioners and so forth, chief of police, everybody, commissioners. And he'd have it in the garden of his house, and he'd have the regimental band there. And it was from 6:30 to 8:30 or whatever it was. It was just a two-hour job. And he, knowing how people were like in that part of the world, they'd stay on, you know, they'd come late and stay on in the balmy evening drinking away. But he had no absolutely no nonsense. At 8:30, he'd stop the band and play God Save the Queen. The waiters would stop serving, and he and Mrs. Brigg would go and stand by the gate to say goodbye to everybody. They were all out in 5 minutes. And the thing is, of course, that some of the Americans were just arriving, because they always sort of, I don't know why it was, not all of them, but there was always a trickle of Americans that sort of drifted in a bit late. But it always amuses us the way he sort of slammed down, and that was it. 8:30. Anybody think he'd had a license?
Military punctuality.
Yes, that's right. Just thinking of visitors, we did have one distinguished visitor. You remember Admiral Keyes from the First World War? Well, his widow, Lady Keyes, came out. And she's the mother of Diana Johnson, who was the wife of the colonel of the 1st Royal Welsh Fusiliers, Colonel Johnson. And I remember there was a cocktail party, and we had a calypso band there. It was always calypso in those days. Thank God we were spared reggae and all the stuff you get these days. And we used to give them Red Stripe beer, which is a local beer, and as the evening wore on, so they got slightly ruder with their calypsos. And it was in their jargon, so you weren't supposed to understand. But of course, people like Anne, who lived there all her lives, knew exactly what they were saying, and so did others. And on one occasion, we were at this cocktail party with Lady Keyes, and they started some song which everybody knew was decidedly very rude indeed. So they also started moving away, except Lady Keyes, who went up to the band and sort of beamed approval through her lorgnette at them whilst this was going on, thinking she was giving encouragement to the natives who were doing sort of something for themselves. But she hadn't the faintest idea of what they were singing. Anyway, that got us through January, I think. In February, we had the annual weapons meeting, which I had to organise. In fact, I've got the programme here. Whoops. It's a bit tatty now, but it shows the various competitions. It was a four-day duration. It had been going on for 60 years, actually, without a break, with a lot of silver cups to be won.
What sort of ranges did you have there? Were these electrical target ranges?
No, it was all done by hand.
All done by hand.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Do you mean the targets?
Yes.
Yes. No, it was all done by hand with a telephone on the firing point and a telephone down in the butts and red flags.
Did you have any moving targets of any sort, or were they all...?
No, not that I can recall. We certainly didn't use them on this occasion. As you can see from the programme, it was a four-day event. With the rifle, we had applications, snap, rapid, falling plates, and a fire and movement thing, which tested people's physical fitness. They had to run from 100 yards to 600, from 600 to 100. And if you've ever done that and then tried to shoot a four-foot target, which keeps on moving around, you look down your sights and all you can see is green grass most of the time.
Yes, but the end of the weapon tends to wave about a bit.
Yes.
You've been running.
But you see that the competitions were individual, and then they were inter-company, inter-sections, and then the police, Jamaica Police, and the Cadet Force also came and competed. And then there was LMG, Sten Gun, and Pistol, and then the RAC, Women's Royal Army Corps. We're allowed to shoot 2-2 and a special, but I suppose these days they would want to fire full bore.
And they do.
Yes, of course. But I don't think people realise what a kick the 303 rifle has.
Well, indeed, a much heavier recoil than on the current SA-80.
Yes, of course.
But, were all the weapons being used on the same range?
Yes, yeah.
Well, presumably you had them at different distances. The various weapons.
Sorry, I'm not with you.
Well, you wouldn't fire the 2-2 from the same distance as you would the full bore.
Oh, no. The 2-2 would be on 25-yard or 30-yard range, yes. Separate range altogether.
Yeah. I'd say the 2-2 was a different range.
Yes.
But the rifle, light machine gun, Sten, would they be all on the same?
Yes. Sten wasn't. Sten was different. Mm. Pistol was different.
And what about the targets? Did you change targets for the different weapons as well as the...
Well, it depended on the distance. I mean, the 4-foot target would be up to, I think, 300, and then after that there was a 5 or 6 foot target up to 1,000 yards, which we didn't do here, where you used special sights.
Because you seem to have, in that program, 600 seems to be the maximum range.
Yes, it was, and that's the all we could get out of that range. There were two ranges, actually. There was another one, which you could use for field firing with mortars, and but that was about it. We didn't have any artillery there, so we were worried.
What about the medium machine gun, the Vickers gun? Could you use that on range?
You could have done, I think, but I don't think we had any MMGs there at all. I don't know what this. I can't remember what the establishment was in those days. I mean, it was. I mean, I know the sort of basic establishment, but whether it included a MMG platoon or not, I can't remember them.
Who thought support weapons in a battalion would have MMG?
Well, yeah. Of course, in the old days, there used to be an MMG company before the war. But then there were MMG battalions. So the MMG rather faded out of infantry battalions. And then I think they came back for a bit as a platoon, but I'm sure we didn't have them in Jamaica.
Were the soldiers there able to maintain a high level of marksmanship?
I suppose the same as anywhere else. I mean, they had regular allocations of the range, which I had to do to see that everybody got a fair crack of the whip. They would all have to, or at least the Royal Welsh Fusiliers and the British element would have to qualify once a year from either marksman first class or second class. I can't remember if it was the third class, but it affected their pay, of course.
Yes.
So they all had to qualify, same as they would anywhere else. So, so I assume they were just as good there as they would have been anywhere else. Yeah. So that was February, March. We had to start planning for the coronation. Of course, that was the year when Queen Elizabeth was going to have her coronation on the 2nd of June, I remember. And we had to start our planning then to celebrate the coronation. And what we did was to have a Trooping the Colour by the Jamaica Battalion. So once I'd given out the instructions and the orders, it was really up to the CO of the Jamaica Battalion to make sure that he did the job properly. But then there was all kinds of things like grandstand seating, tickets, parking, security, which I had to take care of. But they did it very well. Of course, they had an RSM from the Coldstream, who presumably done it on horse guards. So he knew what to do, and they had the mass bands. The Jamaica Battalion had drums only. They didn't have a band, but there was this Jamaica band under my old friend Bobby Jones, who was there. The ones all dressed in this North African uniforms. And then the Royal Welsh Fusiliers and their band and drums paraded as well to make it a good show of it.
Did the Navy take part in this?
Not in this one, no. There was also a tattoo which was put on, which again I didn't have too much to do with, apart from sort of making sure that they got all they wanted. It was put in the hands of CO of the Welsh, Royal Welsh.
Because that's a major theatrical performance, isn't
yes.
it? Yes. Tattoo.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I still got the programme at home. I meant to bring it, but there was all kinds of things like motorcycles, mass bands, gymnastics, horse rides, the usual things. It went off very well. And I think they did, I can't remember if it was two or three nights, and it was open to the public, and they flocked in. They had to pay, of course. There were certain VIPs there who came free of charge, but on each night we had somebody take the salute. And it went off very well indeed. Again, I had to ensure that they got what they... I mean, there are all kinds of things which a battalion doesn't have access to, which we could release for them. Props and, I don't know, all kinds of things which they couldn't normally have access to.
What did you use as the arena for this?
Oh, the Up Park Camp ground. It was used for everything. Mm-hmm. Right in front of the main office building was this great big expanse of green, right down to near the outskirts of Kingston. You could just see the tops of the roofs of the houses at the end, and it had grandstands seating as well. So everything was done there. Games were played on it. All parades were carried out there. I didn't mention, of course, that the Jamaica Battalion had to produce a Guard of Honour for Churchill as well, down in. Down in Kingston. He would have got not the full Guard of Honour which you give for royalty. He'd have got two officers and 48 soldiers and a regimental colour.
Did the Jamaica Regiment have to send a contingent to London before the ceremony?
Yes, they did.
Ceremony.
Yes.
Was that your responsibility as well to get them organised and sorted? Or
having not really, but I mean it was up to the Jamaica Battalion to select their people, and I don't think I was involved very much with that. I remember the chap who was sent in charge was a Jamaican a major Jamaican, Major David Smith, who was outstanding actually, and he took the took him there, and he was to be in charge of the Guard of Honour when the Queen came. And later I heard, when we went back to Jamaica a long time after their independence, that he becomes their chief of staff of the armed services there, and retired by the time we got there. So we were very much organising that. And then, of course, I think it was 9 days after that came the Queen's birthday parade. So that is something I really had to get myself involved with. That was on the 11th of June. On this occasion, we broke with tradition. We'd always had parades before, but this time it was decided, I don't know, I think it was a brigadier's idea, that we should do a march through Kingston. Governor would take the salute. Now, organising something like that on a small scale is just as complex as getting together a big parade, because you still have the same problems. In fact, in this one you have them even worse, because there were scouts, there were guides, there were all kinds of people.
In fact, this is staffing, isn't it, really? It's staff work.
Yes, and getting people at the right place at the right time and knowing what they're doing.
And would the normal birthday parade simply have been the military? The two military units in place?
This is the order which I had to get out for it. I don't know why I kept all these. I suddenly found them. and it needed rehearsals, it needed briefings beforehand, and getting people together to understand what they had to do.
Why do you think the Brigadier decided to have a march through the town rather than normal?
Well, I think it's because we'd just done a Trooping the Colour on for the coronation.
So for the sake of variety, then?
Well, that's right, yeah. Mm. Otherwise you'd have to go through, as people would all have to turn up again. And and it gave the opportunity of more people to see the parade. In fact, they lined the streets, and as you can see, it started at 8 o'clock in the morning.
So leading off, you've got the number one services detachment, the Regimental Goat and Pioneers, the Royal Welsh Fusiliers.
Yes. They were allowed a certain amount of latitude with the goat.
Oh, yes.
Because he couldn't march all the way, so they were allowed to feed the goat in.
Yes.
And take him out when he thought he'd had enough.
Mm.
But he would be there whilst they passed the saluting base. That was that was the main thing.
The Jamaica Girl Guides will be in a suitable position in East Street by 08:15 hours to join the parade as it passes. Gosh, so they're joining the parade and then leaving, so they're only in part of it, presumably.
That's right.
They couldn't. Complicated, doesn't it?
Yes.
In and out of the.
It is, and then we had transport as well coming up behind.
Yes.
So to time it, so that the head of the transport caught up with the rear of the marching troops just before you got to the saluting base, so there was no gap.
Yes. Jamaica Constabulary, Jamaica Police Island Reserve, Jamaica Legion. Are these all joining in? So
yeah.
Veterans as well.
Yes.
John's Ambulance Brigade. Seems to be virtually anybody who could be entitled to put on a uniform. Scout car, carrier. So you've got vehicles as well as men on foot.
Yes, the vehicles came afterwards.
They did. Well, they were following up
They were following up, but they had to be timed, as I said, to make sure that they started sometime after the rear of the marching troops had gone, but not too early, so that they caught them up before they got to the saluting base.
Oh, I say, yes, you didn't want it concertinaing then.
You want them running down down the back of the marching element.
Boys Brigade. Who decided on the order of precedence then, in which the units would appear?
Well, I had to.
You had to.
Yes. They more or less accepted it. Well, it was, you know... But
this can be a very tricky question.
Oh, yeah.
Who is on the right of the line or who is
that's
on the,
right.
of the column.
Yeah, that's right. But it worked all right. Seemed to work all right. I could only request, I could give orders to the military, but when it came to people like the police, I could only say, you are requested to come to a briefing or a rehearsal. Mm. We did a rehearsal, which the brigadier took the salute one morning. And then, as I say, we did the real thing a couple of days later. But because it was June, and it can get quite hot there in the middle of the day, so we started off at 8 o'clock in the morning. Mm. It was all finished by 9:30. Mm. Everybody gone home for breakfast if they hadn't had it already, as they should have done. And there's I've just found the instructions which I had to get out for Churchill. Now, you may think he was only there 5 minutes, but...
There's some pages of the instructions.
That's what you have to do, and the sort of maps at the back. And
yes, annexes with routes marked and so on.
So there's quite a lot of work involved. So I started working on in March, and they wasn't going to come about till June. Well, then in the same month, Anne became pregnant, or preggers as we used to say in those days. And also about that time, I got a letter from the Colonel of the 1st Essex, Colonel Paul Clementi Smith, saying they'd been warned to go to Korea, and he wanted me back as a company commander. So I went to see, because I would normally, you see, in 1953, in July,
the time would be up,
my 2 years would be up. So I went to the brigadier and said, look, this is what my regiment want. And he said, well, I'm sorry, but I've already got permission from the War Office for you to stay here for a further 6 months. And he said, I can hardly go back now and say it doesn't matter. So that was that. So I stayed on in Jamaica for 6 months.
Had you had any idea that he might be going to do that, to get your extended?
No, none at all. He suddenly...
did it on his own.
He just did it.
Yes. Did he say why he'd done it, why he wanted to keep
it? Well, there was so much going on at that time. Mm. And I think he wanted... You see, he arrived... before I got there, he'd been there a short time, about 2 or 3 months, I think. Mm. And I think he felt that if I could stay on for another period, I would nearly see him out, so to speak, because he was a 3-year tenure as a senior officer. Mm. And in fact, the Royal West Fusiliers were due for relief soon after I left by the 1st DCNI. Mm.
So he didn't want to have to break in another operation?
I think that's probably what it was. Mm. But we were up to our necks in all this stuff, and I think he wanted to see, because it was time-consuming.
Yeah.
And once we got through the June, then we all went back to our desks and caught up with all the administrative stuff that had been piling up there, and perhaps he didn't want me to leave all that behind.
What did the Essex Regiment say then when you let them know?
Well, Paul couldn't do anything about it, really. But then, of course, the armistice came in July.
Yes.
In Korea. Mm. So it didn't matter too much. But they went just the same to Korea.
Yes.
And by the time I joined them, they'd gone to Hong Kong.
Mm. I suppose Brigadier Trump's a colonel.
Well, he did, yes. But he said, I'd done it. I got it from the War Office for you to stay here 6 months. Mm. And he said, it's going to be hard for me, he thought it's going to be hard for me to find now a replacement for you, whereas the battalion can always find another one. But anyway, I knew Paul Clementi Smith before the war, so he obviously felt he'd like to have somebody he knew back there for the war, which never came off. So... nothing much, as far as I can remember, happened in April, but in June we had all our parades, which